game, and beyond the rules of etiquette. We should take a look at Tim's as well, see how he's holding up.
Dave's sheet revealed that he had lost a total of 6 hit points. That's not so bad, is it? Asked Julian.
Well, it's more than half of his life for an arm wound.
Sounds worse when you put it that way. How's Tim doing?
Not so hot. He's at 2 points below 0.
Does that mean he's...
No,
said Cooper.
It's still all non-lethal damage.
But I thought he was supposed to gain that back over time. He's worse off now than he was before.
Yeah, he probably woke up and they kicked him again or something.
That's not good, said Julian, not at all comforted by Cooper's speculation what Tim was going through.
If they've kept him alive this long without doing any real damage to him, he should be okay until we can get to him. It's probably better for him to sleep through as much of that as he can.
There was a certain logic to that, and Julian guessed it was better to think about things that way than to worry, considering the amount of good either option was going to do for Tim.
Hey!
Said Cooper, in an unexpectedly bright tone of voice.
I just thought of something.
Julian looked at Cooper expectantly.
We just fought a leopard.
Well done, said Julian. I seem to have a vague recollection of that myself. You say you only just thought of that?
Fuck you,
said Cooper, much to Julian's relief. He was still Cooper.
We should look and see if we got any experience points from it.
Cooper and Julian each looked at their own character sheets. I've got 875 points, said Julian. Is that good?
Yeah,
said Cooper.
That's pretty close to second level. I've only got 725.
Why do you have less than me?
Because you had your nose up Mordred's ass at the beginning of the game.
Oh. The afternoon was beginning to fade into evening. Cooper stretched out his huge gray arms and thumped himself on his broad, bare chest.
Well, I'm going to turn in. Go ahead and wake me up if you get sleepy. Let Dave get as much rest as he can. If you hear anything out of the ordinary, though, wake us both the fuck up right away.
Okay, said Julian. Good night. Julian walked around the camp, looking for something to occupy his mind with, and came up short. He sat down on a rock, and his eyes fell upon his bag. Maybe there was something in there worth looking at. He looked inside and found a large book and a small drawstring leather pouch. He opened the pouch. It was full of something that looked like birdseed. Was that some food that he had forgotten buying? He took out a pinch of it and put it in his mouth. He spat it out immediately. He had never tasted birdseed before, but always imagined it would lean more toward bland than outright offensive to the tongue. Hopefully, the book would offer more in the way of time-killing opportunities. He took a seat on the ground under a part of Cooper's canvas shelter. As if he had had his own personal alarm system, Cooper farted at him. Julian's eyes stung and watered, but he was determined that he was going to have a look at this book. It might be something important. He opened it and found a bunch of hieroglyphs on the first page. Great, he said glumly. A bag of shitty-tasting birdseed and a book I can't read. He looked back down at the page and found that the glyphs weren't entirely unfamiliar to him. The longer he stared, in fact, the more familiar they got. He stared for about a full minute before he was able to start forming words in his head. It was an instruction manual of some kind, but the instructions themselves looked far too complicated to remember and follow. It was full of words he wasn't sure he'd be able to pronounce properly, and gestures that he was almost certain he would never be able to do. At least not right now. He was too tired for this shit right now. He'd have another look at it in the morning, maybe. He closed the book and walked back over to his bag. Just birdseed now. Julian jumped when he heard a muffled noise come from Cooper's direction. Something moved in Cooper's bag, like a small animal was stuck in there. Poor thing. Bad enough to be stuck in anything belonging to Cooper, but when you considered what he was keeping in there... Shit! That's what was moving. The soldier's head. Mordred? He opened Cooper's bag and picked up the head by one ear. The face didn't look happy. It took a deep breath in. Into what, Julian had no idea. It wasn't connected to any set of lungs that he could see. Its eyes darted back and forth until they met Julian's. Scratch my nose? It said. Julian punched it in the nose. He couldn't get a lot of force behind the punch without risking either losing hold of the ear or ripping it off entirely, but he got his point across.
I suppose you think I deserve that, said Mordred.
What do you want? Asked Julian. He considered demanding that he bring them back home, but suspected he knew what kind of answer he was likely to get, and didn't think he'd be able to resist smashing this head into an unrecognizable pulpy mess upon getting it.
Just wanted to help a bit,
said Mordred. You being new to the game and all, I thought you might have some questions. Julian couldn't resist. When are you going to let us come home? Said Mordred. I mean game-related questions. Julian considered punching Mordred in the head again, but decided that he'd better take whatever kind of help he could get. To avoid any further temptation, he placed the head in a tree where a branch forked up toward the trunk. Fine, said Julian. How do we get Tim back?
That's up to you.
Well then, fuck you.
Nothing else you'd like to know?
Like what?
Like what's in that little pouch, for instance?
Julian looked back at his bag and then at the head in the tree again. The bird seed?
Did you buy bird seed at the beginning of the game?
No.
Then why do you think you have a pouch of bird seed?
Because I fucking looked at it, shithead.
What did you buy at the beginning of the game?
Julian thought. I bought a longsword and a tent.
Yes, said Mordred. Go on.
And a backpack and some arrows. The head in the tree rolled its eyes.
Yes, of course. Mustn't forget the arrows. Where would you be now without those arrows? What else?
Nothing else, said Julian. I couldn't afford anything else. I was so broke that you just went ahead and gave me... The head smiled.
That's right, it said. What did I give you?
Julian thought. I don't remember. The head sighed.
Why don't you look on your character sheet?
Okay, said Julian. He pulled out his character sheet and looked at his inventory. It wasn't a long list, and he soon ruled out everything but...
Bag of magical shit? That's all you wrote down?
Yeah.
Do you remember what it was for?
No, said Julian. But I remember it was supposed to have been expensive. $100 or something.
Gold pieces!
Whatever, dude. It's fucking birdseed. What kind of finicky-ass birds do you have around here?
Just spread it around on the ground and see what happens.
Julian went back to his bag, grabbed the pouch, and dumped it on the forest floor. He looked over at the head.
There. Satisfied? Have I completed the mission? Can we go home now?
Look, said Mordred.
Julian looked. The pile of seed glowed with a faint green light.
Shit, said Julian. It's radioactive? I put some of that in my mouth. Am I going to be okay?
It's not radioactive, said Mordred. It's magical. Just watch it, all right?
Julian watched. A chipmunk scurried out from behind a tree, looked at the pile of seed, looked up at Julian, and then back down at the seed, as if he were assessing the amount of danger he would be getting himself into by coming too close. In the end, he decided it was worth the risk. He approached the pile, nibbled a bit, and then ran off. It appeared to have a similar opinion of the taste of the stuff as Julian had.
It tastes like shit. I figured out that much for myself. Shut up and keep watching.
A rat came up and sampled a bit.
Oh, shit, said Julian. There are rats out here?
Don't like rats.
No, said Julian. Who the hell likes rats?
Fine, said Mordred.
The rat scurried away.
What do you think about snakes?
As Mordred spoke, a tiny viper slithered up to the pile and licked at some of the seeds.
Hate them, said Julian.
Toads?
A fat brown toad hopped up to the seed, shot its tongue out, and plucked a little from the pile.
Ew,
said Julian. The head sighed. The toad convulsed, inflated its neck, and spit out the little bits of seed it had taken in. It hopped off.
I think I'm going to throw up, said Julian.
A black bird flew down from a tree, landed next to the seed, and stared up curiously at Julian.
Do you hate ravens, too?
Asked Mordred. Julian shrugged. No, he said. To tell you the truth, I've never given them too much thought, one way or another. He stared back down at the bird.
Good enough for me, said Mordred.
The raven stepped closer on his skinny black legs, rose its wings up defensively, and let out a small caw. Julian crouched down, enamored with the bird, and hoping it wouldn't fly away. He smiled.
Go ahead, little guy. Give it a try if you want.
The black bird pecked at the seed. To Julian's surprise, it didn't immediately fly away. In fact, it seemed to actually like the stuff. It pecked down again and again. It flapped its wings furiously and buried its head inside the pile. Jesus Christ, said Julian. When's the last time this thing had a meal? The bird went on eating and eating, and the pile of glowing seed grew smaller and smaller. It didn't seem possible for it to eat so much food in one sitting. It's ravenous, said Julian. He shut his eyes tightly in a disgusted expression. Oh my God, did I just say that?
Good one, Mordred chuckled.
Julian was glad that he was the only one awake to have heard it. The raven kept pecking away until every speck of seed was gone. It stared up at Julian with shiny black eyes, then it fell on its back and started to convulse. It kicked its legs and flapped its wings in a frenzy. The wing flapping had the additional unnerving effect of throwing its body back and forth on the ground. It cawed sharply and twisted its neck from side to side.
Oh, shit, said Julian. It's dying.
Give it a second, said Mordred.
The bird seemed to calm down after a moment, still twitching here and there, but maintaining enough control to stand upright once more. It spread its wings out, and its body shivered. All of its feathers stood up simultaneously. It opened its beak wide, but no sound came out. A couple of feathers flew off of its back into the breeze, and it gave one last horrible convulsion. Feathers flew everywhere. It lowered its head and flapped its wing as hard as it could without leaving the ground, surrounding itself in a cloud of discarded feathers. As hard as it flapped, and as many feathers as it rid itself of, it never seemed to run out of them. It was as if it were growing new ones. Actually, it wasn't just growing new feathers. It was growing. Just growing. It grew to half again its previous size. It was more like a black falcon now. It stretched out its wings one more time, opened its beak wide, and burped.
Feel better now, big guy? Asked Julian.
Indeed I do, master, said the bird. Thank you very much.
Julian jumped. It wasn't exactly the fact that the bird spoke to him that startled him. He'd been through a lot in the past couple of hours, and a talking bird just seemed par for the course. What threw him off was the way that it spoke to him. It sounded British?
Did that bird just...
He turned to look at the head, but fell silent when he saw it. It was as lifeless as one would expect a severed head in a tree to be. Mordred was gone. The head in the tree sat staring through glazed eyes at nothing. Julian gave it a light punch in the nose, just enough to knock it out of its position in the tree and onto the ground. He once again lifted it by the ear and carried it back to Cooper's shelter. His initial intention was to put it back in Cooper's bag so they wouldn't forget it. But when he considered the likelihood of them forgetting it if he placed it in the line of fire of Cooper's ass, and weighing it against the likelihood of it coming back into being as Mordred just as Cooper was farting, or even having an involuntary shit in his sleep, he was willing to take that risk.
You can talk? Julian asked the raven when he returned.
Of course, sir,
responded the raven.
What's your name?
The bird gave an ear-splitting caw, followed by two small chirps. Julian cringed at the sound.
I don't think I'm going to be able to pronounce that.
I'm yours to command, sir, said the bird. Call me by whatever name you like.
Julian thought for a moment, but the idea at the forefront of his mind wouldn't see to runner-up.
What do you think of Ravenous?
Very clever, sir.
No, it's really not, said Julian. I just thought...
No, I get it, sir, said Ravenous. It's a play on words. I'm a raven. And when you saw me eat all that food, you must have thought I was ravenous. It's brilliant.
Julian lowered his head.
Yeah, it's a stupid pun, but I thought...
Not stupid at all, sir. Supremely clever.
Thank you,
said Julian, not feeling like he deserved this level of praise. There was that, but I also thought it sounded like kind of a badass Latin-sounding name for a raven. You know, intelligent and fierce. Ravenous stepped back and brought his wings forward over his chest.
Is that what you think of me, sir?
He looked as though he might stumble and fall over.
Well, look at you, said Julian. You're bigger than any raven I've ever seen. And as far as intelligence goes, well, I think you might be on par with my friend Cooper over there. No offense.
I can only dream of being the bird you think me, master.
Another thing, said Julian, I'd rather you not call me master.
But, sir!
Yeah, interrupted Julian. I don't want you to call me sir either.
It would be highly irregular and inappropriate, if I may say so, for me to address you as anything but...
How does this work? Asked Julian.
He thought for a moment.
Okay, how about this? As your master, I command you not to call me master.
Well played, sir.
or sir.
Shit!
Ravenous jerked his head up.
1,000 pardons, sir. I mean...
Julian laughed.
You'll fit in well here. My name's Julian. Just call me Julian.
He explained their situation to Ravenous as best he could, starting with his transportation to this world and ending with the leopard fight.
That is a fascinating story, Julian.
Thank you, said Julian. What do you think about our plan for rescuing Tim? Does it sound feasible to you?
It's a brilliant plan, sir,
said Ravenous.
Completely flawless. I don't see how a single thing could go wrong.
Who the fuck are you talking to?
Asked Cooper, scratching his ass with one hand and wiping his closed eyes with the thumb and forefinger of the other. He walked over to the tree where Mordred had been perched and lifted the front of his loincloth to urinate on it.
I'm sorry, said Julian. Did I wake you?
Not so much you,
said Cooper,
as some damn squawking bird.
He shook his member dry, coughed up some phlegm into a puddle of his piss, and turned around to face Julian.
What the fuck is that?
This is Ravenous, said Julian. Then addressing the bird, Ravenous? Cooper!
Cooper blinked his eyes a few times.
Seriously? You called her Ravenous? That's gay as fuck.
Your mom's gay as fuck.
So you got your familiar, did you?
Cooper asked Julian.
I suppose so, said Julian doubtfully. Is that what you are?
He asked Ravenous.
I beg your pardon, sir?
My familiar?
Oh, yes, sir,
said Ravenous.
And quite proud of it.
Yeah,
said Cooper, contorting his face and putting his hands over his ears.
Can you shut that thing up?
I would have thought you'd be impressed.
You've got a big bird,
said Cooper.
I'm impressed, but I'm also fucking tired.
Big? Asked Julian. That's what you're most impressed by?
Cooper looked at his friend thoughtfully.
What? Does it do tricks?
It fucking talks, you dolt.
No, it doesn't.
Sure it does, said Julian. We've been chatting away for the better part of an hour.
Dude, are you okay? Was that crossbow bolt laced with something?
Ravenous, said Julian. Please state your name for my friend here.
Ravenous,
said Ravenous. Julian looked smugly up at Cooper, who was wincing again.
Satisfied?
Seriously?
Asked Cooper.
How do you get Ravenous out of blah, blah, blah?
He spoke as clearly as I'm speaking to you now.
He just screamed like a car horn.
You're insane.
You're the one talking to a bird,
said Cooper.
Listen, you can't actually talk to your familiar until you go up a few levels. What you got now is an empathic link. Maybe that's stronger than I'd always imagined it was, but it's not...
He fucking talks.
No,
said Cooper.
He doesn't.
Ravenous, said Julian, what's your favorite color?
I'm rather partial to lavender.
Cooper laughed.
His favorite color is...
He said lavender.
Fuck, that's worse.
They were interrupted by a loud moan from inside the tent.
God damn it, shouted Dave, crawling out of the tent on two knees and one hand. Who's raping a cat out here?
Julian's got a pet bird,
said Cooper.
Oh, yeah? Said Dave.
He looked over and saw Ravenous.
Fucking A. Ravenous, this is Dave.
Pleased to meet you, sir. My name is Ravenous, and as I expect you already know from my master's introduction...
Shouted Dave, covering his ears. Make it stop.
What the hell is wrong with you people? Asked Julian. He was just introducing himself.
He thinks the bird can talk,
Cooper said to Dave.
Oh, yeah, said Dave. What are his vocal cords made of? Chalkboards and forks?
You guys are dicks, said Julian. Go back to bed.
I'd love to, said Dave. Just stop stabbing that poor thing so we can get some sleep.
Dave and Cooper went back to sleep. Julian sat down with Ravenous on his arm.
I don't know what's wrong with them, said Julian, but I guess we'd better pick up this conversation again in the morning. Get some rest.
Ravenous nodded, hopped down onto Julian's lap, and nestled to sleep. Julian sat with his back against one tree and faced another. He spotted a beetle crawling up the trunk and stared at it. A few hours later, he was surprised to find that it was completely dark outside. Had he dozed off? No. He could clearly remember the entire span of time. He'd just been staring at this tree. He'd always been a daydreamer, but this was different. He hadn't even been thinking about anything, just staring. Anyway, he felt refreshed now. He felt like he could take another crack at that book, but not with only the starlight to read by. He could see his surroundings just fine, but it wasn't the sort of light you'd want to read a book under. Now that the clouds had moved on, the stars were out in full force. In the tiny patches of sky that he could make out through the gaps in the forest canopy, Julian saw more stars than what he thought a full sky might offer on the clearest night back home. He was tempted to make his way back to the edge of the woods and take in the sight of this full sky, but he stayed near his camp. Was this what the sky looked like before smog and electric lights? It hardly seemed possible. Julian thought that it might actually not be. He had no idea where he was, after all, and this world might just have more stars above it than the one he had come from. It might even have a couple of extra moons, or none at all. He scanned a few bits of sky for evidence of any moons. The results were inconclusive. Julian spent the next few hours being bored. After enough time had passed that he thought the other two might have had their full quota of sleep, he considered waking them up. He decided against it. They'd be better off for the extra rest. It was still too dark to properly read, but Julian felt like his head was going to explode if he didn't distract himself with something. He sat down on a rock and opened the book. He shifted around until a patch of starlight fell on the pages. This wasn't so bad, actually. He wished he'd done this hours ago. He flipped through the book to see if anything in particular caught his eye, and was surprised to find that after the first 22 pages, only about a quarter of the way through, the rest of the book was blank. He turned back to the first page. The glyphs, at first, held no meaning for him. It didn't take as much concentration this time before they started forming words in his mind. The words, in turn, were also meaningless to him, but as he focused his mind deeper, complete and comprehensible thoughts manifested themselves in his head. This pattern followed with paragraphs, until he found that the whole page culminated in a singular purpose. This particular spell would offer him a small amount of protection, a small edge in the face of certain perils. It looked as though it might come in handy, but from what he could make out in the text, he thought it was likely to fizzle out after about 1 minute. The payoff hardly seemed worth the amount of effort it would take to memorize all the complicated gestures and incantations necessary to cast the spell. He turned to the second page and found it equally disappointing. It would grant him the power to detect whether or not something was poisonous. A practical skill under the right circumstances, yes, but this wasn't the sort of thing he got into wizardry for. Julian found that the spell on page 3 would allow him to read magical writing. Well, he was already fucking doing that, wasn't he? He kept flipping. Bullshit. Bullshit. Boring. Bullshit. Oh, hell yeah, he whispered. As a child, he'd always been fascinated by magic. In more recent years, however, reality started to creep in just a bit deeper with every pizza he delivered. Pizza was real. Magic wasn't. The imagination of his youth had been squeezed out of his soul like toothpaste. But here he was, a wizard in a fantastic world, looking down at a book of spells. The spell he was looking at now put the toothpaste back in his tube. This one would send bolts of energy out of his fingertips, which would make their way unerringly to whomever he cast it at. That's what being a wizard was all about. Practicality be damned. He stood up, set the open book down on the rock he'd been sitting on, and started practicing the necessary motions and incantations. He was so deeply involved in his studies that he didn't notice Dave and Cooper walk up behind him until Cooper spoke.
What the fuck are you doing?
Julian turned his head around, his body frozen with one leg up and his arms positioned in a way that made him look like he was trying to hug an invisible giant. He relaxed into a normal standing position and turned the rest of his body around to face them.
I'll show you what the fuck I'm doing, he said. Point at something. Anything.
Cooper pointed to Dave.
No, said Julian. Bad idea. Pick something else.
Fuck,
said Cooper.
I don't know. That tree over there.
All right, said Julian with a wry smile.
He closed his eyes, shook his arms to loosen up the joints, and brought his hands together. He opened his eyes and stared fixedly at the tree.
By sulfate,
he shouted, and swung his left arm up over his head.
Ascorbic acid! Azodicarbonamide!
He raised one foot off the ground and stamped it back down.
No!
Cooper shouted.
Julian, stop!
Julian didn't stop. He thrust both hands forward, fingers stretched out.
Methylchloral isothiazolinone!
With that, the tip of his right forefinger glowed with a bright white light which grew in intensity until it burst into a glowing arrow. The arrow flew lamely towards its target in a shower of sparks, like a bottle rocket struggling against the counterforce of a small parachute. Julian lowered his arms and watched it fly. Cooper and Dave turned their heads slowly to follow the path of the projectile, hobbling the rest of the way through the air into the tree, where it fizzled into a small puff of smoke and slightly charred bark. Julian shrugged and turned to his friends.
"What do you think?" he asked.
"I think you're a fucking idiot,"
shouted Cooper. Dave shook his head.
"Well, it was somewhat less spectacular than what I was expecting," admitted Julian.
Then he grinned.
"Still, pretty cool that I can do that, don't you think?"
"Yeah,"
said Cooper.
"Pretty fucking cool. Except now you can't."
"What are you talking about?" "You only get to do that once per day," said Dave.
"No way,"
said Julian, smiling the smile of a man who knows something his adversary does not.
"I memorized that shit."
Dave sighed.
"Go ahead, then," he said. "Try it again."
Julian rolled his eyes and turned back toward the unfortunate tree.
"Okay, here goes."
He shook his arms again and brought his hands together. He closed his eyes and then immediately reopened them.
"Shit."
"Uh-huh,"
said Dave. He poked lightly at his leopardskin gauntlet and winced.
"I can't remember a single word of it," said Julian. "I spent an hour memorizing all that. How can it just be gone like that?"
"The magical energy flows from your mind, or something like that."
"That's bullshit," shouted Julian. "That's not the way memory works."
"That's how it works in the game,"
growled Cooper.
"It's in the rule book."
"My arm's killing me," said Dave. "I'm going to go pray for my spells."
Julian nudged his spellbook off his rock with his foot and sat down.
"So I've got to spend another hour studying that shitty spell?"
"Not today,"
Cooper grumbled.
"Why not?"
"Because you're a first-level wizard,"
said Cooper.
"And a dumb one at that."
"Watch it," said Julian. "Your intelligence score is 4 points lower than mine."
"That's why I'm not a fucking wizard."
Ravenous flew in and landed on Julian's shoulder.
"What's all the fuss?"
"Cooper's mad because I used up my only spell," said Julian.
"What'd you use it for?"
"I shot a tree."
Ravenous shifted his weight several times from foot to foot.
"Was the tree..."
He paused to find the right words.
"Threatening you in some way?"
"No," said Julian. "I just never casted a spell before, so wanted to try it out."
"Congratulations!"
"Thanks."
Cooper grimaced at Ravenous. Julian pressed on.
"I don't understand why I can't just study it again," he said to Cooper. "We've got the time, don't we? I mean, Dave's going to need some time to pray or whatever, isn't he?"
"You only get to memorize your spells once per day. At first level, you only get one first level spell. A wizard can get bonus spells based on his high intelligence score. You, however, don't have a high intelligence score, which is why I advised you against being a wizard in the first place."
"But I wanted to use magic."
"I told you to be a sorcerer. You have a high enough charisma score to be a decent sorcerer."
"What does charisma have to do with sorcery?"
Cooper shrugged.
"Not much,"
he admitted.
"I think they just wanted to make another class based on charisma, because nobody wants to be a bard."
"So you're telling me," Julian said, "that if I sit here and study that same spell again, I'll be unable to memorize it?"
"That's what I'm telling you."
"But that doesn't make any sense."
"Game balance,"
said Cooper, as if that explained everything. Julian only stared back at him. Cooper sighed.
"If a wizard can keep casting every spell he knows willy-nilly, then wizard will be far too powerful. As it stands, some people already feel they're overpowered at higher levels."
"So you mean to say we're living in a world where the laws of nature, physics, and reality are governed in turn by half-baked rules some guy made up?"
"In a nutshell."
"And game balance always trumps logic?"
"Pretty much."
"So I'm pretty well screwed then. Forever doomed to be a shitty wizard."
"Nah,"
said Cooper. He slumped down against a tree.
"You can always choose to be a sorcerer whenever you get to level 2.
"You can just switch horses like that?"
"Not exactly. At least some of you will always be a shitty wizard. But you don't have to take any more levels of wizard if you don't want to. If you take a level of sorcerer at level 2, then you'll just be a level 1 wizard and a level 1 sorcerer. If you find sorcery suits you, you can keep going with it. If not, you can always take a level in something else. I wouldn't recommend spreading yourself out too thin, though.
What do you recommend? Asked Julian. I mean, I really should do what's best for the group. This isn't a game anymore, after all.
Go with Sorcerer. Dave and I can hold our own in a fight pretty well. Hell, so can you. But we really should have some sort of spellcaster in the party.
What about Dave?
He does clerical spells, and I have a feeling he'll be using a lot of those to heal us. The sort of spells you use are arcane, and they have a variety of different uses, not the least of which is blasting the shit out of large groups of enemies.
That's sort of what I had in mind going in. Julian looked over at Dave. Who is he praying to exactly?
Dunno. Some god or another.
And this god is just going to up and give him whatever spells he wants?
Any of the level one spells.
To what end?
Well, what do you mean?
Asked Cooper. I mean, I don't see what's in it for the god. Cooper yawned and pulled a hunk of yellow sludge out of one ear with the claw of his pinky finger. I'm sorry, said Julian. Am I boring you with talk of Dave over there actually communicating with the divine?
Kinda, yeah.
Ravenous, said Julian. Cooper here just asked me to ask you where you were hatched.
Really? Said Ravenous. He flapped down to the ground. Because, you see, it's actually a very interesting story. I was...
All right already,
said Cooper.
Just get it to stop squawking. What do you want to know?
Sorry, Ravenous, said Julian. I was just kidding. He doesn't really want to hear your story. Myself, I'd love to hear it. We'll swap stories later.
Very good, Julian.
Why don't you go fly around and tell us if you spot anything alarming or interesting?
Of course,
said Ravenous, and flew away into the trees.
It's really starting to creep me out how you keep talking to that bird.
So tell me more about Dave, said Julian. He's a priest or something?
He's a cleric,
said Cooper.
Like a holy warrior. He fights for his god. Think of him like a knight in the Crusades.
Fights against whom?
Anyone whose alignment opposes God, I guess.
Alignment?
Good, evil, law, chaos, that sort of thing.
What alignment is Dave's god?
I don't know,
said Cooper, with a hint of desperation in his voice.
You really should be asking him these questions. I'm a fucking barbarian. I can't read. I barely know my own name.
You can read your character sheet, Julian argued.
I think that works differently.
How so?
I don't think those character sheets are of this world. In fact, I don't think the conversation we're having right now is of this world.
I don't understand.
For example,
said Cooper.
Right now, we are having a fairly intelligible conversation. Am I right?
Okay.
My character would be unable to have this conversation with someone of this world. I'm a fucking moron.
So why can you talk like this with me?
Because when we're just alone together, part of us is still us. When we interact with anything in this world, we're strictly our characters.
I still don't understand.
Let's do an experiment,
said Cooper. Okay.
Take this stick and write a word in the dirt. I'll try to read it.
Julian pursed his lips, took the stick from Cooper, and wrote the word cat on the ground. When he finished, he looked up at Cooper. Well?
I have no fucking idea what that says.
Honestly?
No,
said Cooper.
I was lying because I thought my lack of literacy might impress you.
Julian took his character sheet out of its tube, scanned through the spells listed on the back of it, and then held it up to Cooper, pointing to a word. What does this say?
Prestidigitation,
said Cooper, unhesitatingly. That's amazing, said Julian.
Not really,
said Cooper.
It actually kind of sucks. It's just a spell for performing little tricks, like at a kid's birthday party or something.
No, said Julian. It's amazing that you can read prestidigitation on my character sheet, but you can't read cat when I write it on the ground.
You know, I was being sarcastic before when I said I was trying to impress you with my literacy.
Let's see how you do with math, suggested Julian. What do you get when you multiply... Chapter 7. Tim's body was bouncing up and down when he woke up, surrounded by the sound of galloping hooves. His whole body ached, but his face was absolutely throbbing with pain. The taste of blood was thick in his mouth. One of his eyes was swollen shut. The other one might have been as well. It felt like it was opening, but no light was reaching it. He was in the dark. He noticed his hands were tied behind his back. There was only one explanation. He was lying face down on the back of a horse with a bag tied over his head. Shit. He moved his bound wrists together to get a feel for the rope and grinned inside his bag. He would be able to get his hands free in a matter of seconds when he chose to. Not yet, though. Not at this speed. He didn't know what kind of damage he'd take from falling off a horse at full gallop, but imagined he could survive it. It was the other horses he heard right around him that he thought he probably wouldn't survive. They just trample right over him. Best to lie still until they slowed down. In the meantime, he would work out the rest of his escape plan in his head. His circumstances didn't allow for a whole lot of complexity. He'd free his hands, take the bag off of his head, hop off the horse, and... No, he would be spotted as soon as he freed his hands. He'd have to hop off the horse before he took the bag off of his head. It was risky, but he'd need as big a head start as he could get. The horses pounded the earth beneath their hooves for what seemed to Tim like a very long time. But then, time tends to pass more slowly when one is tied up with their head in a bag. He went over his plan again and again in his head. Each time he revisualized it, it seemed more and more plausible. By the time the horses actually slowed down, it seemed foolproof. He was a rogue. This was the sort of thing that rogues do. He had taken the escape artist skill and the stealthy feat. Also, he had the added stealth that came naturally with being a halfling. He was quick and nimble and hard to hit. Everything was working in his favor.
"Ho there!" shouted the captain,
and the gait of the horse he was riding on made the transition from gallop to trot to walk in less than 10 seconds. Now was the time. He freed his hands with as little effort as he had expected to, and pushed himself backwards from the animal's back. He barely had the time to register the feel of his feet hitting the ground before he felt someone else's foot kick him squarely in the temple. Stars flashed inside the darkness of the bag, and then he once again entered the realm of complete darkness. The next time he woke up, it was due to a splash of water on his face. It tasted like someone forgot to flush. He was unable to wipe it away as he discovered that each of his arms was being held by a soldier on either side of him. His vision swam through the dirty water and focused on the bucket that it had presumably come from. The bucket was being held by a short, bald, humanoid creature with dark yellow skin and rusty red eyes. He had a face like a bat, complete with a broad, flat, and turned-up nose and giant pointed ears. He grinned at Tim, exposing a mouth half full of once pointy teeth that had opted to just rot away rather than fall out like the other half had done. He was very short by human standards, only a little bit taller than Tim. The man behind him towered over both of them. It was Captain Righteous Justificus Blademaster. Nice to see a familiar face.
"Check him for hidden weapons," ordered the captain. "Look closely for thieves' picks."
Tim had nothing on him that they hadn't already taken away. After a very thorough search of his person turned up nothing of interest, the guards pushed Tim into a cell with a tiny barred window on the rear stone wall near the ceiling, presumably to remind the occupant that there was still a world full of sunshine outside which they would never be a part of again, and a small hole in the far corner carved through the stone floor, presumably for the occupant to shit in. His latter presumption was based on the corona of brown-stained stone surrounding the hole. The iron barred door clanged shut, and the little creature with the bat face turned a comically large key in a lock that Tim reckoned he could probably pick with a ship's oar. He then slunk down the hall and out of sight. Captain Righteous gave his subordinates a look, and they shuffled off in the other direction.
"It was foolish of you to try to escape," said the captain, "but I admire your courage."
"Why am I in here?"
"For murdering one of Lord Palahin's guards, of course."
"I didn't murder anybody,"
Tim argued.
"You were one of the murdering party," said the captain. "Anyway, you haven't been formally charged with anything as of yet."
"Oh," said Tim in a tone of unexpected relief. "What does that mean?"
"It means you'll stay here indefinitely until the Lord decides what to do with you. Probably not longer than a day."
"What happens after that?"
The relief had abandoned his tone.
"Either your friends will attempt some sort of rescue mission, unlikely, or they won't," he mused. "If the actual murderer can stand trial and execution, then you may be spared. If not, you'll likely do well enough for a scapegoat."
He started to walk away. Tim grabbed two of the bars and shook the door.
"A scapegoat!"
he shouted after the captain.
You seriously think that anyone will believe I chopped a guy's head off? Look at me! I'm only 3 feet tall!
What I think is inconsequential, said the captain.
He turned away, walked out, and closed the door behind him.
You won't get away with this!
Tim shouted, knowing there was every chance in the world that Captain Righteous would get away with it. He had to shout something.
There, there, little feller,
came a voice from the cell across from Tim's. Tim hadn't noticed anyone in there before. The initial scan that Tim's eyes had made of his surroundings had probably just passed this guy off as a tarped-over pile of moss-covered garbage and ignored him. Now that he focused on it, he recognized the shape as a human squatting in the corner. Well, he supposed he couldn't be sure it was human, but it was something like it. He was bald on top, but had a long white beard. He looked to have been made out of tent parts.
Save your breath, he said. Ain't no good gonna come from yelling.
Tim said nothing. He stared at the old man until he realized two things suddenly and simultaneously. One was that being put to death quickly might be a blessing compared to spending any amount of time in here. The other was that he'd been correct in his guess as to what the hole in the floor was for. He turned his head away as quickly as it would go and shut his eyes as tight as he could, but the image had already been seared into his brain.
Purr,
said the man.
Ain't nothing but nature running her course.
He grunted, coughed, and then held his breath. The following silence was broken by a sound that was going to haunt him along with that image for the rest of his life. The old man exhaled.
She's running it pretty freely today.
Tim dropped down to his knees and hid his head under his arms. He wanted to throw up, or cry, or both, but nothing came out. The old man, having finished his business in the corner, stood up and walked up to the bars of his cell.
There now, little guy, he said. What's got you down?
Tim stood back up, clutched a bar in each hand, and looked up at the man.
What's got me down? He said. Did you really just ask me that? Look around to where we are. I'm in a tiny cell in a fucking dungeon. I just watched an old guy take a shit. Sorry if I'm spoiling your fun.
What's your name, lad?
Tim, said Tim distractedly.
My name's Greeley. Been in here 14 years next week.
What for?
A bunch of us got drunk one night and thought it'd be a laugh to go steal Lady Pahalin's laundry while it was drying in their garden. You know how kids are.
Well, how'd you get caught?
Mr. Passed out,
said Greeley.
Next thing I knew, 'twas the middle of the day, and I was lying in the garden wearing naught but a sundress and looking up at four guards and the lady herself. Never could hold me liquor.
And you got 14 years for that?
Greeley muttered.
Got life for it.
Life?
Course, I don't think they ever expected I'd make it this long. Not ideal living conditions down here. You're right about that. Not everybody makes it very long, but it can be done.
Why bother?
How do you mean?
I mean, said Tim, what's the point of keeping yourself alive down here so long if there's no chance of you ever getting out?
I'm a lover of life,
said Greeley cheerily.
And every now and again, you meet some interesting folks down here. Take Gorp, for instance.
Who's Gorp?
He's the guy whose cell you're in, lad. He died a few months back. Dwarf he was. Big, stocky fella. I think there might still be part of his leg back there if ye look.
Greeley pointed to the back of Tim's cell. Tim followed his finger and saw something white poking out from behind his bed.
He only made it a couple of months. Wish he'd held out a bit longer. He knew some dirty jokes.
Tim was taking in only fragments of what Greeley was saying at this point. The bulk of his attention was focused on a dwarven femur.
Where's the rest of them?
Rats took them away, piece at a time.
Rats?
There was a hint of panic in Tim's voice.
Oh, sure,
said Greeley.
This place is crawling with them, if you know where to look. And that's one of the secrets to making it down here. But he wouldn't have any of it. Too proud to eat a rat. Have ye ever heard of such nonsense? I'll tell you what, they weren't too proud to eat him when they got the chance.
I think I'm going to be sick.
We'll do it over in the corner,
suggested Greeley.
It attracts the rats. mean, they're easier to catch if they're in the corner.
I don't want to catch any rats, and I'm certainly not going to eat them, said Tim.
Pah, said Greeley. Another one.
He shook his head.
We'll see how you feel about rat after you have to choose between it and the slop that Shorty brings you.
Who's Shorty?
He's the jailer. You met him. Nice enough guy for a goblin, but I think he only knows how to cook one dish. It looks like snot garnished with bug parts. Tastes worse. Hold off on dismissing rat until you try that.
I'm not going to be around that long, said Tim. I'm getting the fuck out of here.
Greeley smiled.
Is that so?
Fucking A, that's so, said Tim.
And how do ye propose to do that?
I'll use my skills, said Tim. I'm just locked in a dungeon, for fuck's sake. I've been locked in dungeons hundreds of times.
Really?
Asked Greeley.
Because when ye first got here, ye were whimpering about it like a little bitch, if you don't mind me saying.
Tim ignored him.
The CM always provides a way out, if you use your head.
This must be a new record, said Greeley. I don't think I've yet seen a man lose his mind this quickly before, and I've seen plenty of men lose their minds.
This lock is a piece of shit. It should be easy enough to pick.
Greeley wheezed and laughed.
What are you going to pick it with? Your willy.
There's bound to be something in here that I can use as improvised lock picks, said Tim, scanning the tiny cell. I just have to look everywhere.
He started to move to the bed. It felt heavier than it looked.
I wouldn't do that if I were ye, said Greeley.
The laughter had gone from his voice.
Why not?
Asked Tim, heaving as hard as he could against the bed, but moving it only a couple of inches.
Why is this bed so fucking heavy?
It's attached to a lead brick that covers a hole in the wall.
Tim rested, panted, and smiled.
There's a fucking hole in the wall?
He shook his head and laughed.
Let me guess. It's probably just wide enough for me to crawl through.
Greeley shrugged.
Yeah,
he said.
I suppose that it's about that big, but it won't.
Unfucking believable, said Tim. That's about the lamest setup for an escape that I've ever encountered.
He set his feet firmly and leaned hard against the frame of the bed. It started to shift.
Only Mordred would be so unimaginative as to... What's that noise?
There was a loud scratching sound coming from behind the bed, presumably where the hole was supposed to be. Greeley lowered his hands on the bars and frowned.
Rats,
he said.
Ew,
said Tim. He considered grabbing the former dwarf's femur to hit the rats with, but then thought that touching a dead body was still more gross than trying to jump on a rat. He jumped up onto the bed and waited for one of them to scurry past. He looked over the side against the wall.
Oh my fuck! He shouted.
What looked back at him was not what he expected at all. It was a rat all right, but it was about the size of a Rottweiler. It might have been bigger than him. And it looked pissed off. Two red eyes glared at him from behind a mouth full of needle-like teeth and saliva-clumped spikes of hair. Two claws scraped furiously against the mortar of the hole it was trying to squeeze itself through. He jumped off of the bed as though it were on fire, grabbed the femur like it was made out of second chances, and backed up against the corner of the cell with the shithole. The bone was a little less than half his height, but it was thick and solid. He gripped it with two hands, one at the top of the shaft and the other around the ball joint. The knee end was thicker, and he imagined it would hurt quite a bit to be hit with it. He could still hear the mad scraping of claws, and guessed that the huge rat might be stuck in the hole. Part of his mind told him that he might have a better chance if he went back and pushed the bed back against the wall. He might push the rat back, or even hurt it. The majority of his mind, however, told him that he didn't want to be any closer to that thing than he had to be, and that cowering in the corner holding a bone was his best bet. The scraping became rhythmic, and then started to get fainter.
Be on your guard, said Greeley. Here comes the first one.
The first one? Tim shouted back at him. How many are there?
Hard to say. There's a nest of them.
He craned his neck and raised an eyebrow.
I'd say somewhere in the neighborhood of...
Ha!
Out in the open, the rat was even more horrifying. It barely had enough hair on it to qualify as a mammal. Its sides and back were scraped from squeezing through the hole in the wall, and tiny streams of blood trickled around filthy and sparse patches of fur. It took a second eye to him, and then lunged forward. Tim swung the bone like the bases were loaded and missed the rat completely. The rat didn't fare much better. Tim was small, but he was finding out just how nimble he was. He jumped up, kicked off the wall, and landed on his feet on the rat's tail. The rat shrieked, and Tim shuddered. The noise was so horrible that for a moment, Tim lost control of his hand, and the bone clattered onto the stone floor. The rat nipped at him again, and once again, Tim jumped out of the way. He was more agile than this thing, and he might be able to dodge a few more bites, but he wouldn't be able to keep this up for long. He put his arms out to make himself look bigger. He wasn't sure if that worked or not, but he was able to initiate a slow, clockwise face-off with the rat. He hoped it would buy him enough time to grab the bone again. They didn't quite make it that far. Sensing that the rat was about to make its move, Tim dove for the bone, and the rat caught him by the foot. Tim screamed as the top and bottom of his foot was invaded by what felt like thousands of hypodermic needles, probably injecting entire civilizations worth of bacteria in the saliva. Tim ripped his foot away. It tore into ribbons as it raked across rat teeth. Tim swung the bone as hard as he could and finally connected with the rat's face. It was an awkward angle, and it accomplished little more than buying him some time to stand up again. With its face covered in Tim's blood, the rat managed to look even more terrifying than it had before. It jumped up at him and bit a small chunk of skin from his calf on the same leg with the injured foot. Tim held back his scream and tried to channel that energy into his swing. Too much energy. He swung wide again and hit nothing but air. The room spun around, but he managed to duck out of the way of another rat bite. Tim held the rat at bay with the end of the bone. It stared back into his eyes, drooling his blood, whisking its leathery tongue around its lips, looking for another opportunity to strike. Tim saw that he had actually managed to do some damage to it when he hit it before. Blood flowed from a gash in its nose.
"Better hurry it along, lad," said Greeley. "You're about to have some more company."
"Shit," said Tim, and did the only thing he could. He took one more swing. He missed.
"Fuck!"
The rat closed in for the kill, and Tim knew that one more bite would probably do it. He blocked the bite with the bone and then tore it out of its mouth. The rat hissed at him, and Tim swung the bone around one more time. He connected squarely with the side of the rat's head. It fell over sideways, and Tim beat it a couple more times for good measure. Interrupted Greeley.
"Mr. Tim?"
Tim looked up and then over toward the bed. There was the familiar sound of frantic scraping, claws against brick and mortar.
"Oh, yeah," he said. "Shit."
He crawled over to the bed and tried to push it back against the wall. With only one good foot left to push with, the bed wasn't budging.
"He's nearly out," said Greeley. "Get ready."
"Fuck, fuck, 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 fuck,"
Tim muttered to himself. He examined the bone. It had a fracture running down it and wasn't going to take a lot more abuse before it split in two. An idea occurred to him, and he deliberately smashed the bone into the floor, breaking off the weakened part. What he was left with resembled a sword more than a club. It would do nicely. He waved it around until he got a good feel for it, thrust it forward a couple of times, and then crouched down on the side of the bed. He'd only have one chance at this. But if he pulled it off, this rat should go down much faster than the previous one. The scraping calmed and stopped. Tim resisted the urge to run back into the corner. Claws clattered against the stone floor, and a second rat scurried toward its fallen mate, completely oblivious to any threats to itself. As soon as its head was in view, Tim thrust his weapon forward, straight into its neck. It didn't even have a chance to shriek. It just gurgled as its blood poured down the length of Gorp's former leg. The rat fell, and Tim wasted no time making another attempt to move the bed back against the wall.
"You got a third one coming through,"
Greeley warned Tim.